getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours. That's right, I said 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning as we get you set for the start of Winnipeg Jets training camp. The Young Stars tournament underway already in Penticton, British Columbia. Joining us on the program this morning, Paul Edmonds, Winnipeg Jets play-by-play broadcaster on this fine station, is going to join us in 30 minutes' time, live from Penticton. Also on the program, Daniel Briere. You know the name. He recently retired from the NHL. He's going to join us in the second hour as we'll look back on what was a tremendous career for Daniel Briere. Technically, a Winnipeg Jets draft pick.
Well, Coyotes in June of 96.
I think officially the sale happened on July 1st or something. So he was drafted a few days earlier as a quasi-member, let's say, of the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think we'll ask him about his time in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably skip over that topic. And then at the start of the third hour, Bill Hoppe from Buffalo Sabres beat writer is going to join us, talk about the Sabres, their offseason, and their signing of Cody Franzen earlier this week. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, of which there finally is some, is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you both, as you are quite enjoying that chorizo wrap that you picked up earlier this morning. Both Richard and I thought you brought in a large apple pie to eat to start the show.
It's the breakfast of champions, Drew.
Yes.
By the way, I'm happy to see you because I wasn't sure if I thought you might be, you know, announcing that you're a father.
So yes, not yet.
It's going to happen any day, though, right?
Any day now. So yeah. If I was a betting man, I would suspect you might not see me next week, but we'll see. I don't know. I don't know how these things work. I don't really have much say in the matter. It's really up to the baby, and it's up to Laura.
You have been pregnant for about 9 months now.
Yeah, no. As I said, I'm just moral support for Laura. You know, as her belly grows, you know, carrying a child, I'm just growing my belly out also to match everything up, and you know, and everything.
You're going to call the child chorizo wrap?
It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? And then, you know, little junior chorizo wrap. It's just beautiful.
I thought you guys agreed on seven.
No, it's not seven. Oh. It's not Jimmy. Which is a long inside joke between all of us, but not yet. Any day now, but not yet. It could happen during the show.
We're looking forward to it. Anytime you can add a member to the Illegal Curve family, and we've been growing the family now. Rory's part of the family.
That's right.
Producer Rory.
Yeah. It's exciting.
And also, it's really nice that I also actually have a preemptive restraining order filed against you so that you can't come within 100 feet of the child.
No, Uncle Ezzy's going to be babysitting very soon.
Anyways, let's get started with the Winnipeg Jets. Kevin Cheveldayoff, general manager of the Jets, doing the media rounds.
Yep.
Earlier this week, and of course,
enthralling.
Yeah, and of course, one of the key topics that he was asked about is, you know, heading into the Young Stars tournament in Penticton, is the status of negotiations with Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien, both of whom are going to be unrestricted free agents at the end of the year, both of whom have been topic number one on the minds of Jets fans throughout the course of the summer. No developments on that front. Here's the exact quote from Kevin Cheveldayoff. Dialogue is ongoing at different stages with different people, Kevin Cheveldayoff told to the Winnipeg Free Press. Again, there's lots of moving parts that come into play. Some of it is things that are in your control. Some are things that are out of your control with respect to maybe other people in the marketplace or other contracts. We live in a cap world that is an interesting time right now when it comes to the future and what it holds in store for all those kind of things. So much of our world at this point in time is projection and speculation, and when it comes to projection on the players or projection on the cap, all those things come into play when you're dealing with the issues we're dealing with right now. Close quote.
So that's just a bunch of words that don't mean anything. And I got to tell you, like, He could have just said, we're having discussions with the players and we haven't yet come to an agreement. Like, so much of our world at this point is a projection, speculation, and when it comes to projection on the players and the projection on the cap, like, that's what happened when you moved to the salary cap world in 2004, right? Five?
When do we stop talking about being in a salary cap world? It's been most 10 people years know. It's now, been a decade, right? At, like, this point.
We live in a cap world that's an interesting time right now. I think it's been interesting for the past 10 years. And it comes to the future, whatever that means. I just got to tell you, like, you guys have heard me say this before, but, like, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff has done a fine job. I don't think he's done a spectacular job or a terrible job. I think he's kind of in the middle right now, and there's still some moves like these that have to be made to really make a judgment on his tenure so far. But I do think his comments are insulting to the public, because we're in a pretty smart hockey town, and he can actually give answers. And if you listen to other guys talk, other GMs talk, whether it be Kenny Holland or Jimmy Neal, different guys who we've had on the show or interviewed with TSN or different networks, they're pretty candid. Brad Treliving, for example, pretty candid. And they actually give answers. I mean, this is nothing. This is different stages. Dialogue is ongoing at different stages with different people. Just say, I've been speaking to Ladd and Bufflin's agent, and we haven't been able to come to an agreement yet, and we're still having discussions. Or, if you don't even feel comfortable saying that, you say, right now, I don't want to comment on the negotiations. It's pretty simple. But you don't need to talk for three paragraphs about nothing. I mean, the people see through that, don't they?
I think so.
The people here know hockey. Like, when you do the pre and post, we have calls, when we have tweets, people know their stuff. So they know when they're being talked to like that. So I'm over that. In terms of the fact that it seems like nothing's been done,
let me interrupt in the interest of fair time for everything. Kevin Cheveldayoff was also on TSN 1040 in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And this is via Rick Ralph, so via Rick's Twitter feed. Here's what he said to TSN 1040 in Vancouver. We've had a lot of conversations with Andrew Ladd's representatives as recently as a couple of days ago. He's the captain of our team, our leader, an important player, and we're going to make hard on making that happen.
So why does he say that to the, not say that to the Winnipeg media, but say that to the BC media? That's weird.
I don't know. I would hope it's not a calculated thing. I mean, yeah, maybe it is. But, I mean, that's, if he gives that answer to Winnipeg,
yeah,
perfectly fine. Nobody's got a problem with that answer.
That's fine.
On Dustin Bufflin, so many different variables that come into play. One is trying to find the level of the salary cap, where that's going to be. In our situation, obviously, we've got players like Ladd and Buff, but we've also got players like Scheifele and Trouba on last year's of their entry-level deals. There's a lot of work to do.
But Ezzy, I mean, let's be honest here. Everybody knows that, and every team has that problem, right?
Right, and you know, to read too much into these quotes, which aren't much here, mm-hmm. I mean, isn't going to get you anywhere. We know that a contract is coming up with Andrew Ladd. I think we'd agree. There's probably a better chance that is announced before the contract with Dustin Bufflin. I guess it's possible that both contracts are announced at the same time. But the timing, you know, Chevy coming on H&L, we know that he keeps his cards close to his vest, chest, sorry.
He might be wearing a vest on top of that chest. Yeah.
And,
so, well,
and
it's possible.
It's difficult because everyone expected this contract to be done earlier in the summer, and it's kind of become this looming off-ice storyline heading into training camp. And I don't think it's going to be a distraction for anyone. I know that will be the discussion heading into Winnipeg Jets training camp. But unfortunately, it's become a distraction, I think, for fans. And it is something that needs to be discussed, because you're talking about your cap, your two of your best players that need a contract. And when you head into the season, mm-hmm. and not to say that Andrew Ladd and Dustin Bufflin and their respective agents can't sign a contract throughout the season, but as we know, it gets more and more difficult, and then, you know, you're talking about the possibility of a trade becoming more realistic. So as far as Chevy's comments go, yeah, I agree with Rich. I mean, it's frustrating. It's a non-comment. I mean, there is nothing there of substance. It's a non-answer. But again, I mean, if you're coming on air and talking about it, just choose to not talk about it, I guess.
That's just it. Like, it's a filibuster, right? Like, the point is if I'm assuming he's going to have his 10 questions he's going to have to answer, or the 10 minutes he'll have to answer the questions, more like it. And if he can talk a long time about nothing for 3 minutes, that's less time he has to answer questions.
Sure. reading between, I mean, I'm more interested in the comments to TSN 1040 because I think those are significantly more interesting. Yeah. And he provides, I mean, he doesn't provide any information, but his wording in those answers are a lot more significant in that it sounds like Andrew Ladd is one that they, quote unquote, have to get done.
Yeah, I think we knew that.
I think we knew that. Yeah. And then he really, I mean, it seems like he's sort of definitely pouring a little bit of cold water on the idea of a Dustin Byfuglien contract getting done just by bringing up all these other reasons why he can't get the contract done with Dustin Byfuglien, but needs to get it done with Andrew Ladd, the leadership qualities, the spine of the team, whatever else.
I mean, if they want to get Andrew Ladd signed, I'm guessing right now they're going to have to go to 6 years for sure. Like, my guess is that he's at 7, probably wants 7. They probably want 5.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I think that, you know, that would make you assume a reasonable middle ground would be 6 at, you know, we've talked about the numbers.
Yeah.
6.5 per.
Right.
So I mean, that's what you're talking about. You're probably arguing over that last year. And if it's losing Ladd for nothing or paying him one more year at the end of his contract for 6, seems like a decision that's going to have to be made to eat that last year and just do it.
Well, the player has the leverage in this situation. It's just, I mean, we talk about it all the time on the show about who's got the leverage and how to negotiate with the leverage.
Day by day. Every day goes by, the player has more leverage.
Right. The player's already got, the ball's already in the player's court today in terms of leverage. And then it only gets more and more as the season goes on. Now, Ezzy, you said that you don't think that this is going to be a distraction if it doesn't get done by the time, let's say, the season starts. I tend to think that it might be a distraction if neither deal gets done between now and the course of the season. You know, how do you feel about that one, Richie?
Well, you know, I see what Ezzy means. You know, you put the team together in that room, they're not going to necessarily think about the contract. But I do think it's a distraction for the players, like Byfuglien and Ladd, if they're not signed. And I think that may have a factor on their play and that uncertainty. So I do think it'll be a bit of a distraction. Especially, I think actually it will be a bit of a distraction. I think, Yezzy, when you look at it in the sense of if they are you mentioned possibility of trade. If they are unsigned and the team starts winning, then I think it becomes a bigger distraction because if they're not signed, the team doesn't think they're going to sign them. The team basically has to trade them, but can't if they're in a playoff spot, or you don't think they could, or I don't think Kevin Sheveldayoff would trade him in the playoff spot likely. So that's where I think it becomes a bigger distraction. So that's the whole thing about, you know, leverage day by day. I think the more risk comes with it.
Yeah, and it's always difficult to qualify just because a player is never going to tell you it's a distraction ever.
Sure.
You've never heard any athlete, period, that's going to tell you, oh, I was an unrestricted free agent. Maybe afterwards they'll tell you.
Yeah.
But even then, they probably won't want to tell you that just out of respect to their teammates and everything like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's got to be a distraction when This is what you've focused on all summer, and the agents obviously take care of the negotiations. But hey, in that dressing room, the Winnipeg Jets dressing room, everybody knows that Ladd and Buff, their contracts are up at the end of the season. This is if they don't sign. I'm saying heading into training camp because there's still a chance. I still think there's a good chance that Andrew Ladd is signed within the next week, 2 weeks, and. You know, it's possible that Buff could be not that far behind. It could be that they're waiting for one contract to be signed before they proceed to the other, right? I would assume that Andrew Ladd would get done first and then Dustin Byfuglien. But as far as the team, I agree with Rich. I mean, for the player, there's that uncertainty. You always know that because you don't have a contract extension, you could be traded. I mean, that's the business of hockey, right? That's the way it works.
But you saw last year, but we had Jarmo Kekalainen on the show. Remember that, guys? And they asked him about
Columbus Blue Jackets general manager
Nick Foligno. You know, basically, did you expect this kind of? Did you, like, when they had to pay Nick Foligno, would you have kind of signed him to this deal earlier in the offseason? And basically said, do I think Foligno is going to have a crazy year? He had a crazy year last year, really productive, and he made himself more money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, I don't think Ladd and Byfuglien, maybe Byfuglien a little bit. I don't think Ladd is going to play himself out of any dollars if he struggles the first 20 games or 30 games of the season.
I don't think really Ladd can probably play himself into much more money either. I mean, how many more points is he possibly going? I mean, he's not going to become a point-a-game player.
I'm not saying, Drew, that he's going to, but if he gets hot and maybe increases his value, you don't know.
Sure. You don't know.
Right?
I mean, that's
you don't
fine.
Know. I mean, maybe he gets on a hot streak. Doesn't mean that it'll sustain itself, but at the time, at the beginning of the season, there's pressure and all that. I don't think he's going to get less. Mm-hmm. I think Byfuglien depends on how, really does depend on how he plays and how much of a risk teams think he is defensively.
Both players in the team would prefer if they signed a contract extension before the season started. And you know, we're running out of time here. Two weeks, 3 weeks here to get a contract done. I think they would prefer that. But it's turned out to be a lot more difficult. And look at guys, we've sat here for 3 months over the summer since the draft and talked about it. And I think we all agreed that we thought Andrew Ladd was going to be a slam dunk. Not to say that it still won't be, because, you know, once the contract is signed, then, you know, we can look back and say that this was just a big waiting game, right?
Sure.
But with Dustin Byfuglien, it was always going to be harder. But, you know, now you have the real possibility heading into training camp, which starts this week, mm-hmm. coming up, that both players aren't signed, and then you're going to have to get the contract done early season, mid-season. You know, we talked about Getzlaff and Perry when they were pending UFAs. They were signed in March. So are you going to see that type of scenario where, you know, Ladd and Byfuglien don't sign until January, February, March? I don't know. I would think that the team doesn't want to let it linger that long.
Luckily for them, they're not going to have a lot of national attention because A, they're in Winnipeg, and B, Stamkos and Kopitar aren't signed.
Sure.
And that's all anybody really cares about outside the city. Those two big guns coming up for sale.
Nobody's obsessing over what the fate of Ladd and Byfuglien for next
season.
They're
just not in the same class, so they're not going to get the same attention.
Yeah. We will see. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Prospects Tournament taking place in Penticton, BC. The Jets lost 3-1 to Calgary last night. We'll talk about it next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we are very pleased to announce that our latest sponsor on the program, Keener Jerseys. You just heard the commercial from them during the last commercial break. Thrilled to bring on board our friends from Keener Jerseys. They are actually the sponsor of this segment as well. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. I wanted to mention before we look to the Young Stars tournament that Grant Clitsam, Winnipeg Jets defenseman, it was also announced earlier this week that he's going to start the season on the IR with his, he's had, I think, two back surgeries in the past 2 years. So I think it's safe to say that if he's going to be...
It looks like he's going to start the season.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to start the season on IR. He's recovering from the back surgeries. And so, you know, that's sort of another one of the one-way defensemen who is sort of, you know, there's the logjam in terms of the Jets' defense. This is one player who's, who's unavailable, and that'll clear up a little bit of the picture, a little less clear as mud then.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's worth noting, right? I mean, you hope that, first off, you never want to see an injury end a guy's career, and you hope it's not going to end his career, don't get me wrong. But
right.
you don't like to see an injury like this linger. So certainly you hope the guy's back and can at least give it a shot healthy. If you're looking at it from a numbers perspective of 10 defensemen on one-way deals and say he'd be on the IR, that would take you down to 9. They may carry 8. So, you know, people are kind of worried what's with the numbers, but you'll see what happens in preseason and if there are injuries and things like that. Many times these things work themselves out,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily in a positive way, other injuries, but the idea is the depth will help you. So
yeah, well, we saw that the Jets needed, yeah, you know, absolutely. We thought last year that they had too many defensemen and they obviously needed all of them because they had to go out and acquire Jay Harrison with all the injuries. So Grant Clitsam going to likely start the season on the IR, but we hope that he is able to return to the lineup at some point during the course of the season. Last night, the first game action for the Winnipeg Jets, I guess, albeit the Young Stars of the Winnipeg Jets in Penticton, BC, as part of the Canucks Young Stars tournament, falling at the hands of the Calgary Flames by a 3-1 margin. Ezzy, you watched a lot of that game last night. Anything jump out at you in particular in terms of performance? Brandon Lemieux scoring for the Winnipeg Jets A lot of people maybe have him penciled in as one of those dark horse candidates with a good training camp that they might, he might get an opportunity to fill one of those slots with the Winnipeg Jets as the holes that we've mentioned in the forward group entering the 15-16 season.
Yeah, I caught the majority of that game and was listening to Paul Edmonds and Shane 90, who had, of course, the broadcast on our station. And, you know, even Paul Maurice, you know, said this at the game, you know, he's not really focused on the score. And, you know, Keith McCambridge, who's obviously coaching the Jets at this Young Stars tournament, would say the same thing to you. And it was a bit of a slow game. And, you know, at times the Jets were mixing it up with the Flames. But, you know, when you're talking about the first game of a tournament in a tournament in general, which you're not that concerned with the outcomes, yeah. Wasn't that surprised. Yeah, you mentioned Brendan Lemieux. He had a nice goal. And you know, Connor Hellebuck struggled, especially on the second goal that was scored by Ryan Lomberg, who was a tryout for the Flames. You know, as far as guys that stood out, you know, for me, some players that I hadn't seen play that much, like a guy like Michael Spacek, who was a late pick of the Jets at this year's draft. You know, smaller guy, had good speed, but everybody, guys, it has their eyes on you know, the big, if you want to call it the big three, Josh Morrissey, Andrew Kopp, and Nikolaj Ehlers. I would say those three players in this Young Stars tournament have the best chance, and no, you know, that's no disrespect to Brendan Lemieux, because you guys know how much I like Brendan Lemieux, and liked his dad, and I think everybody is kind of looking at Brendan Lemieux as kind of, you know, a Claude Lemieux 2.0. He had a good game, you know, and when you're looking at the, you know, this tournament, though, you know, you can't really overanalyze it. That's the problem. I mean, you almost struggle to not underanalyze it as well. But you know, Paul Edmonds was on H&L, and we'll have him on here in about 5 minutes. But you know, he was talking about some of these players, especially that want to get noticed at the main training camp. What they're trying to do is just be noticeable on the ice. That's all they're trying to do. You know, the fact that, you know, Morgan Klimchuk scored an empty net goal and they won 3-1 doesn't mean anything. You're talking about some other players that on this team that are trying to make a name for themselves. A guy like Scott Kosmachuk, I think, now has a year in the AHL. A guy like that, this is his third Young Stars tournament. Yeah. A guy like him, I think, even though he doesn't have a good shot at making the Jets, I think a tournament like this probably means just as much to him as it does to a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers. Nikolaj Ehlers, I thought, was okay. He had a few scoring chances. But again, you know, it's one game, and in this tournament, it's not really what matters, Richie. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers has his sights set on making the Winnipeg Jets out of main training camp.
Sure.
So for him, I mean, you know, if he gets a couple goals, great. If he doesn't, who cares?
Let me ask you this, Richard, and this is something I was thinking about as the tournament gets underway. You know, is a bad showing at this kind of Young Stars tournament more detrimental to a player than a good showing is positive?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think, Drew, it's not enough games to get too down on a guy, but I think it's the same amount of games, but you'd probably get, you're more apt to get a little more excited than you are down if a guy performs. So I think it might be the opposite even.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. But I don't think either way, Drew, it's too extreme. You know, it's who you're going up against is important. I mean, as he mentions, guys, the older guys, I think the older guys you want to see perform a little bit better. You know, it's like when junior and the 20-year-olds play against the 16, 17-year-old guys. You want to see a 20-year-old really establish themselves. So you like to see that here, too. It evens out a little bit more as you get older. But I don't read too much into these tournaments at all. I think it's nice to see for the teams to compare to the other teams in terms of the young players. But again, you're only playing a certain amount of teams. You're doing it in a short period of time. These guys are coming off of off-season training. They're not even in the groove yet. Right. So, and you don't know, like a guy like Ehlers, for example, you don't know, he might come into camp, the team might say, hey, we want you to trim 3 or 4 pounds and improve your speed, or we want me to put on a few extra pounds to improve your strength. We don't know. And I mean, obviously they speak to these guys, but at the same time, it's when you have them with all the other players for a long period of time, you can kind of get them to do more so what you want to do. And these guys have all been on their own and they're coming in together. And also these guys, I mean, some of them have played together before, lots of them haven't. So if you put a bunch of guys on a line, you're hoping it works. But, I mean, it could happen that these guys play, what, four games?
Yeah, three games,
and they end up playing with two guys that they have no chemistry with, and a guy looks like he's not as good as he actually is because they just don't click. And I'll turn, you know, conversely, if you put three guys together who have great chemistry, they may look better than they actually are because they just work. And they may not work at a higher level because they're not all skilled enough, but sure, they work at this level.
And Richie, I mean, you know, just to go back, I mean, I think Nikolaj Ehlers was noticeable. I mean, he's arguably the most skilled player on the ice. You know, Sam Bennett was in the game too, so he's a pretty good player too. But you could argue that Nikolaj Ehlers is more skilled than Sam Bennett. You know, you could make that argument. He's that highly talented. But when we're looking at, as Richie said, you're looking at the lines and what they're trying to accomplish. They're just trying to get something going. And I think for Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, he would probably, he's very hard on himself. We know that from last year's Young Stars tournament. And Andrew Kopp not playing with the top line, was playing with Kozmichuk and Chase DeLeo. And he had a chance, he had a 2-on-1 chance and almost tied up the game. And then had another good scoring chance. So I think, you know, Andrew Kopp, a guy that we didn't see that much with the University of Michigan, a guy that, you know, impressed me a little bit, and we'll get Paul's take on Andrew Kopp as well. But, you know, he's a guy that has a lot to prove. And again, even though these guys are trying to make the impression in main training camp, this is setting them up, right? They don't want to have a poor Young Stars tournament, because that's not going to lead well into the main training camp. So, you know, the first game, they lost 3-1, doesn't mean anything. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the next couple games what happen. But nobody is ever going to remember who won the Young Stars Classic.
No, and
nobody cares.
And I think at the end of the day, I mean, years ago, we didn't even talk about these things.
Did they even exist?
I didn't think they even, maybe some of them existed, but they didn't even talk about these things.
Sure.
So take it with a grain of salt.
Gotcha. Well, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Paul Edmonds. He joins us live from Penticton, the site of the Young Stars tournament. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and thrilled that he's joining us bright and early.
Yeah, Drew, what are you asking him to come on at 7:30 in the morning?
He agreed to it. Paulie Edmonds. Paul, good morning. Thanks very much for doing this, and I'm sure that you always have hoped to wake up with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Who's thrilled about 7:30 in the morning, you or me?
Well, I'm already awake. I mean,
being very unreasonable.
It's not that. Hey, I asked Paul to join us. I'm like, is that going to be too early? He said, nope, not a problem. I have the text message proof, Paul. You can't hold this one over me.
We're really going to have to make this up to Paul.
Yeah, in my world, at home at 7:30, somebody would already be fighting, dogs would be barking, and son would be yelling at somebody. So that's all right.
Let's go. Well, Paul, appreciate it as always. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Young Stars tournament last night getting underway. Jets falling 3-1 at the hands of the Calgary Flames prospects. The result isn't that important. We all know that. You know, what stood out to you about last night's game? Was there one individual that, you know, that you wanted to keep your eye on entering the game, and who would that individual have been, and how did they perform last night?
Okay, well, a couple of things from that. You're right, the result was not important. Although, listen, this is the second time I've been here, and I would say to you that I'm sure management would love to come in and roll the table on this thing and go 3-0. Does it really matter at the end of the day? No, but I'm sure that there's a little bit of bragging rights toward it. But you're right, it doesn't really matter. It's a process that you go through here, and this is the start of the process to begin your season. you know, what impressed me was I didn't think that the Winnipeg Jets were very good. The young stars were very good in the first period. They had a terrible time getting the puck out of their own zone, making that quintessential first pass, advancing the puck to make a rush. They had very little zone time in the Calgary end in the first period. But what was impressive was they made some adjustments between the first and second, and they ended up coming out and playing the rest of the game, the remaining 40 minutes, they really competed with Calgary. The problem was they were down 2-0 at one point, about midway through the first period, so they had to chase the game for the balance of it. Now, they were propelled a little bit, I think, and I think even Keith McCambridge was talking about this post-game, that what he had to say was reinforced to them because they scored a goal late, so they had a little bit of an uplift before the period was out after the first, so they could take that into the second. So that, for me, was important. It was also impressive by the fact that I thought that they kind of shored some things up, maybe looked like they had knocked off the rust, looked a little bit better in their own zone, and had more zone time in the offensive zone as the game went along. It's interesting because a lot of us have anointed Andrew Copp as maybe that fourth-line center for the Winnipeg Jets this year, replacing Jim Slater, who wasn't retained as a free agent this summer. And for the most part, I thought that Andrew Copp played a fairly good game. The guy that, for me, was impressive up the middle, that I think has said, oh, wait a minute, guys, there's another guy here that would like to compete for that job, and that's Ryan Olsen. I thought he was the best player on the ice last night for the Winnipeg Jets. He picked up the puck a few times, came down the wing, looked like he had done it before. He's got real good speed. He's got good size, and I'm going to be watching for him in the next two games to see exactly what he does here. The other thing that was interesting, guys, was I was really interested in the pace of the game. It was quick last night, and then I ended up watching some of the game between Edmonton and Vancouver, and that was even quicker, and it was nasty. So there's some real good competition going on here. You can see it between the two teams, but there's also, I think, some inner competition amongst some of the Winnipeg Jets for some of the spots that some of these guys already know that are available to them if everything kind of lines up for them.
Yeah, Paul, I agree with you in there, especially towards that end of the third period there, and you started to see Brendan Lemieux mix it up with Emile Poirier, and Sam Bennett was getting into it with Josh Morrissey there. It was nice to see them get into it, because I agree with you. It was the game was a little slow at times, but you know, I wanted to touch on what you just talked about with Ryan Olsen. You know, everybody knows that Nikolaj Ehlers has a good shot at making the Winnipeg Jets this year. And as you mentioned, Andrew Copp is another guy that has a shot at making the team. But when you talk about Ryan Olsen, a guy who was drafted in 2012, or a guy like Scott Kozmichuk, who had his first year in the AHL last year, is it safe to say that this tournament might be a little bit more important for those players?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, here's the interesting part is I didn't really notice Scott Kozmichuk last year. He did score a goal. I believe it was in the last game, and it was a pretty big game, too, or a pretty big goal to get the Jets' young stars into the game. Last night, I thought he made some real good plays. So my point being that from year one to year two at this tournament, the guys that have competed in it multiple times, say like a Ryan Olsen or a Kozmichuk now, not necessarily Nikolaj Ehlers, but I just felt that they looked more comfortable and they were certainly more noticeable for some of the things that they did outside of just scoring a goal. Kozmichuk made a couple of plays along the wall that freed up the puck, and I think it was a two-on-one that resulted, and that was Andrew Kopp's breakaway last night. So, you know, I noticed things like that from Scott Kozmichuk, and yeah, you know, there's the ability for these guys, I think, to feel a little bit more comfortable in their surroundings because they've been around this kind of scenario and this environment before. Therefore, you know, they're producing a little bit more. And, you know, this team, when you look at it, you're going to see a lot of these guys that we're talking about here today, that I've talked about last night in the air and for the next two games, play for the Manitoba Moose this year. So it's not like, you know, three-quarters of this squad is going back to major junior hockey. You're going to have a handful of those guys, and the rest of these guys are going to be playing in Winnipeg this year. So that's what is really interesting about that. And say a guy like, you know, Ryan Olsen, if he doesn't make the Jets this year as that fourth-line centerman, then he's probably going to be the top-line guy in Manitoba, and we're going to be able to kind of chart his progress as a second-year pro in Winnipeg if we want to go and watch him play however many times, you know, you want to invest the time in going and watching the Manitoba Moose. So that's what's kind of intriguing about this year as well. But, you know, I, like I said, and I'll repeat myself, I thought Ryan Olsen was best player on the ice last night. He's a guy that I'm really watching for to take some of those spots in the big club. And, you know, you mentioned Nikolai Ehlers. I didn't think he had a very good game last night. I thought there was just a little bit too much individual effort last night. And as a result, there was a lot of turnovers and, you know, turnovers that were bad, turnovers that were neutral ice or at his blue line that had Calgary go the other way in transition and at the very least, get a shot on goal.
That's interesting, Paul. I was going to ask you about Ehlers, so I'll switch that and ask you about Josh Morrissey. I know he was -2. That doesn't always tell you the whole picture. How did he perform last night?
You know, it's interesting because I wonder if sometimes he tries to do too much. And the other part of that is, I don't know if they game planned on him, but he's a guy that should be able to pick up the puck and make that real good first pass and should be slippery enough where he can make a move to free himself up a little bit of space or maybe that half a second of time to make that pass. I just thought that last night they were on him quick. It's only that I've seen him at this camp and then at the training camp levels live, so I can't make a comparison on what he would do in a major league game or, pardon me, a major junior game because he's had so much success at the Western Hockey League level and he scored points. And, you know, there was times I thought that he was noticeable. There was also times that I thought that they were trying to take some liberties with him last night and they were trying to bang him around on the ice a little bit. So, you know, I'll reserve judgment sort of at this point on how I thought he performed. He was noticeable at times. There was a time where I was the second goal on the Ryan Lomberg goal, where he took a route in toward the corner. He ended up running into his own player. Lomberg walked out of the corner and let a bad angle shot go and beat Hellebuck. So, you know, if you want to look at the tape, can you sort of cast some blame on the defensive scheme there? For sure. But at the same time, I mean, maybe Morrissey had the right angle on him and his forward that came down low to help out and support wasn't cognizant of where the defenseman was going to go and they bang into each other. So, you know, sometimes I think that maybe Josh Morrissey has felt that there's pressure on him to perform because he's a high draft pick and he's put a little bit too much pressure on himself in that regard and it has stifled sort of his development and progress at this level. So we'll see what happens for the next two games. But I think I guess to answer your question, Richard, I think there's a little bit more that we would like to see from Josh Morrissey in the next couple of games.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Paul Edmonds, of course, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290. We're discussing last night's Young Stars tournament game between the Jets prospects and the Flames prospects. Paul, wanted to ask you about another young forward for the Jets. They had drafted him in the third round back in 2013. That's Jimmy Lodge. You know, play got into one game with the Moose last year, but had a, you know, a decent year over a point a game in the OHL. How did you think of his game last night at the Young Stars tournament?
Yeah, there was times where I noticed him, you know, called his name for sure. I thought he played okay. Certainly was a factor in the only goal the Winnipeg Jets scored. And that was kind of an interesting goal. I'll just kind of run through it. They were on the bits, kind of the midst of a line change. And Lemieux had stayed out, and Olsen and Lodge came over the boards. And next thing you know, the puck got kind of dumped in deep, and Olsen made a good play on it. And he ended up kind of stealing the puck, and then he put it down low for Lodge, and Lodge put it back out in front. You know, Lemieux was coming in as the third guy, so you had your F1 and your F2 down doing what they need to do. And Lemieux read the play perfectly as F3, last guy into the zone as the forward, and you know, the puck ended up coming into the slot from Jimmy Lodge, and it was sort of a one-time redirect, if you will. That was the only thing that Lemieux could do, and, you know, it ended up getting the Jets on the board with 15 seconds remaining in the first period. So from that perspective, you know, they had a real nice little three-way passing play to produce a goal. So, you know, Jimmy Lodge will be a guy that will play for the Manitoba Moose this year, undoubtedly, and he'll be another one of those guys that you sort of categorize as, okay, let's see what kind of development he has coming out of Major Junior and turning pro this year, and where's the upside, and is he going to be an offensive guy? Is he going to be one of the top six for Keith McCambridge? So, you know, I thought Jimmy Lodge was noticeable for sure, and then, of course, it always helps when you contribute to getting a goal to get your team back in the game. So lots of guys that are interesting here in Penticton, and Jimmy Lodge was one of them as well. He's a bigger kid. You know, he played with Ryan Olsen, so there's some speed there as well. So, you know, we'll see what the next two games produce for him as well, because, you know, these guys are fighting for jobs, and those guys that are already penciled in to be in a certain area, like, you know, to go to the Manitoba Moose, are also maybe fighting to see who's going to be a top-line guy at that level as well. And if you're penciled in to be an AHLer this year, I think if you're a forward, you'd rather be a top-six than a bottom-six guy for sure.
You know, Paul, it's interesting, you know, leads right into the next question, because you mentioned players that are penciled in as AHLers, and I thought Eric Comrie was very impressive, and everybody has their eyes on Connor Hellebuck, thinking there's a chance that he might maybe push Andre Pavlik or Michael Hutchinson for a backup role in the NHL. But you look at Eric Comrie, comes in, stops all 16 shots, stops a penalty shot, and I thought he just looked calm, cool, and collected. And I think it's interesting, too, because he's playing right in front of Keith McCambridge, you know, who's going to be his coach this year in the AHL. What did you think of Eric Comrie in that?
Well, let's take nothing away from Eric Comrie in his game, and you're absolutely right, as he, you know, he comes in and he stops two shots, and, you know, to get in the game there. And, you know, it was old school, guys, too. I hate to digress here, but it was really old school. You know, there's 9 minutes and 53 seconds left in the second period, so out comes Hellebuck, in comes Comrie. Three guys come out with about five pucks, and they're standing on top of the crease. They're firing pucks at her, you know, to try to get him warm there as he's come off the bench, sitting there for a game and a half. But, you know, and then he, two shots in, as the bullets are really flying, he has to stop a penalty shot, which he did. Again, take nothing away from him, but he was the benefactor by a better defensively played Winnipeg Jets Young Stars team. Connor Hellebuck was not in the first period. So if you want to make the argument that Comrie was better than Hellebuck, yeah, the goals against would certainly tell you that. But I would also tell you that Comrie had the benefit of a team that was better in front of him, better in their own zone, than Hellebuck had in the first period. So to say that, this is where I kind of open my eyes and say, well, this is really interesting, because when you talk about Pavlik and Hutchinson and then Comrie and Hellebuck, all four of these guys will be in Winnipeg this year. Okay, it's just a matter of where it plays out and who is going to actually be with the Winnipeg Jets. I think it's safe to say that Pavlik is contractually, I mean, there's no way that you want to send him down. And at the end of the day, he was pretty good in a career year for him as a Winnipeg Jet by numbers. And then there was also Michael Hutchinson, who pushed him and really, from a standpoint of about a middle of the season, was the best goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. So all four of these guys are going to be in Winnipeg this year. Is Connor Hellebuck going to push for that backup job? Perhaps. Is Eric Comrie going to push for that backup job with the Winnipeg Jets? Perhaps. But I will say this, that the two guys that are going to end up in Manitoba are probably going to be required to play a lot. And one of those guys is going to play more than the other guy. So I think that whichever guy ends up being back in Manitoba that maybe looked like he should have deserved a backup job, and he ends up back in Manitoba, the only reason for that is the guy needs to play. So it will be interesting to see how they sort of handle the goaltenders at the AHL level this year, because one of those two guys probably needs to play more than the other. Or maybe they say they're both so good, let's split the duties with them. But I thought that both goaltenders in their own right were pretty good last night. But like I said, Comrie benefited from the fact that his team was a little bit better in front of him by the time he came in midway through the second period.
Final question, Paul, then we'll let you get back to sleep, even though Drew interrupted that earlier today.
I'm up now, boy.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go for my jog.
should ask about a Winnipegger, Peter Stojkovic. You know, the Jets have seen, I guess, Eric Fair from Winkler play for the team, but it's got to be a thrill for a Winnipeg boy to put on the Jets jersey and play in this tournament. Maybe the hopes aren't as high for him as they are for guys like Josh Morrissey and such, but how did he fare last night?
Well, I'll tell you what. I thought that he played okay. I thought that he honestly fought the puck a little bit at times, but I was impressed by the amount of ice time they gave him, which tells me that somebody's made a decision that Peter Stojkovic, just like I did with the goaltending scenario here, somebody has said, you know, we're going to let him play. He was on the second pairing of defense last night. I thought he played okay. He was with Jan Kostelec, and we all know about the season that Jan had last year, certainly with Rimouski and going on to the Memorial Cup. So, you know, maybe a little bit of nerves for him, even though, you know, he's a few provinces away from his hometown. I know that there would be eyes and certainly ears on Peter Stojkovic and how he would play. He's a big kid. He's mobile. You know, he should be mature enough because he's coming right out of college. I think he's destined for a spot on the blue line with the Manitoba Moose. But I would say that we'll have a better acquittal of his skill set and how he's going to play over the next two games, because I think that he's probably glad to have that first game out of the way, because I think there was a little bit of nerves last night. And also catching up sort of the quickness, the pace of the games I talked about way back in my first question. You know, sometimes guys can't, you can't predict or you can't understand how quick the game is going to be until you actually live it. And then all of a sudden you're like, holy smokes, this is coming at me at 110 miles an hour. So I think Peter is glad to probably have that game out of the way. He didn't look bad, but like I said, I just kind of thought that he fought the puck a little bit at times, and we'll see if he has a little bit better control and a little bit more poise with the puck starting tomorrow against Vancouver, and then, of course, concluding the three-game tournament for Winnipeg on Monday against Edmonton.
That game against Vancouver will be on TSN 1290 starting at 4 p.m. Central Time tomorrow. Paul Edmonds and Shane Knighty with the call, of course. Paul, appreciate your time this morning, and enjoy your day in Penticton, whatever you have planned. Maybe it's an afternoon nap as a result of this early morning wake-up. Whatever it may be, enjoy it, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, guys, anytime. Listen, I just want to say that I caught a little bit of that Edmonton-Vancouver game last night. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that Connor McDavid is going to play after the game last night. There's some talk that he's not going to play against Calgary or against the Winnipeg Jets. But I will say this. It was the first time I saw him live and in person. He is the real deal.
You got Jake Virtanen, gave him a nice welcome to the sort of NHL or the Young Stars room with a solid body check there as well.
Can't wait to see him, Paul. Jake
Virtanen was running around a bit like an idiot last night, and I'm kind of surprised that somebody didn't take him to task on that. They tried, but he wouldn't go. So it was kind of interesting because the game between those two teams last night, the second game, was entertaining. I mean, it had some great scoring chances and playmaking ability, but it also really threatened to boil over, and part of that was early on when Virtanen hit Connor McDavid. But I'll tell you what, get your tickets now. I sound like a wrestling promoter when Connor McDavid comes to Winnipeg, because you'll want to see this kid.
Terrific, Paul. Thanks very much, buddy.
Guys, my pleasure. Anytime. Have a great day. Have a great weekend.
You too, Paul. Thanks
Paul.
Very much.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL at some of the players being signed to PTOs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Paul Edmonds for joining us live in Penticton, site of the Young Stars Tournament. Jets in action, the second game tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Gentlemen, we're time of year here where as training camp is set to get underway in the next week or so. A lot of PTOs being signed by players throughout the course of the NHL, including some players that you probably would have thought 2 months ago would have received contracts, legitimate one-year contract offers. Curtis Klenkross, PTO in Toronto with the Leafs. Brad Boyes, PTO in Toronto with the Leafs. Devin Setoguchi, he gets a PTO. I'm surprised he got that, to be perfectly honest, given how bad he was last year.
With the Leafs.
With the Leafs, another one, yeah. Steve Bernier, PTO with the Islanders. Ray Emery, they have a goaltending issue there with
Vasilevsky
going to be out for a number of months in Tampa Bay. Ray Emery gets a PTO there. Brett Bellamore, formerly of the Carolina Hurricanes, he gets a PTO with the Rangers. David Booth, formerly of the Florida Panthers, he gets a PTO back in Florida. So does Martin Havlat. Yeah. Late yesterday, that was announced. James Shepard, he gets a PTO with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Keith Olley and Corey Potter, they both get they're both defensemen. They both get PTOs with the Phoenix Coyotes, the Arizona Coyotes, pardon me.
Yeah.
And Scott Gomez and Scotty Upshaw get PTOs with the St. Louis Blues, another team that's got some injury troubles entering the start of the season. Of those players that I just rattled off very quickly, who do you think could make an impact and get signed to a full contract?
I think Curtis Glencross could definitely make it. He's probably the best of the bunch that we just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll likely crack that Toronto Maple Leafs roster. Brad Boys can score and might get you some value. So Brad Boys would be somebody else. Whether how he is in the room might be a question. You heard some rumblings, not great in the room. And then the other guy, I'd say the third of that bunch would be David Booth. David Booth hasn't necessarily been the same player since Mike Richards lined him up in the fall of 2010, I think it was. You know, over the hash marks or right at the top of the circle with the elbow, like it was a dirty hit. And he hasn't been the same, but he's still to me an NHL player. And on those depth lines in Florida, they have some youngsters, but maybe he's a guy you could help their fourth line and play with skill if you want to kind of make it a skill fourth line. So I think those three guys would be the most impactful for me.
Yeah, and I remember the piece I wrote for LegalCurve.com, three of these guys were players that I thought might be candidates for the Winnipeg Jets. James Shepard, out of the bunch, is one a little bit younger. And last year, due to injuries with the New York Rangers, he actually played a pretty key role for the New York Rangers in the playoffs last year. You know, didn't light the lamp. But, you know, he was playing on the fourth line, and Alain Vigneault really trusted him. Shepard's a guy that has really kind of come into his own in the last few years. He was a mid-first-round pick. And he's kind of struggled, with Minnesota and San Jose. But he's a guy with Columbus. You know, he's a guy to me that, you know, I could see him fitting in there nicely.
You're right, with
a young team.
Yeah.
Did Ray Shepard ever play for Columbus?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Are they related?
He might have been.
Is that his kid?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I always thought it was. Okay, maybe not. But I always thought.
Let's go to the internet.
I always thought he was.
Totally on piggyback on that. It's a good point because James Shepard has had knee injuries and issues, and he doesn't skate as well as he used to. But he's built pretty solid, and he's pretty smart. And that's kind of the way Columbus is built: big, strong, solid, like that kind of a squad. So he can fit into the depth lines there too. I think that's a good point there.
Still looking for any confirmation on that part there.
Well, while you look on Wikipedia, Drew. Live on air here. Some of these other players are very interesting, you know, many of which Richie already touched on. David Booth has had just a horrible last few years with injuries and expectations and all of that. I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, our friends Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello that seem to be dishing out the PTOs like they're going out of style.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Rich. I thought Curtis Glencross might be a nice fit on the third line of the Winnipeg Jets, you know, kind of a veteran presence on a younger line, because as we've talked about, I mean, your third line heading into training camp could be Nikolai Ehlers, Adam Lowry, Alexander Burmistrov, or you could throw in, you know, a Joel Armia possibly. So I thought maybe a guy like Glencross, but for Toronto, a team that is in a 100% rebuild and have done a nice job of stocking up their prospects, you know, players like Curtis Glencross and Brad Boys, you got to remember, I mean, who's going to fill the void left by Phil Kessel?
Well, also, you saw what they did last year. They signed Mike Santorelli to a nothing contract.
Yep.
He plays well for them, and then they flip him at the trade deadline or just before the trade deadline and get an asset out of him in a draft pick. No reason why they can't do the same thing this year with Curtis Glencross if he performs well during the regular season.
It's a sound strategy.
Yeah. Let's head to break. Before we do that, Ray Shepard, there's no connection, as far as we can tell, between James Shepard and Ray Shepard.
I apologize. I always thought it was his kid. But
Ray Shepard has been named the second best golfer among athletes of sports other than golf by Golf Digest.
And James Shepard actually has a German Shepherd.
Well, there you go. We should all be shepherds here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We come back, we'll talk about the World Cup of Hockey. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, more details about the World Cup of Hockey announced earlier this week in Toronto. And we'll go through a bunch of the different details, but the one that jumps out to me as being the most important of them all is that they've made the right decision, in that they've made it at least a best of three final to try and attract a little bit more attention and make it a little bit less, you know, harken back to the Canada Cups of old, which were best of three finals, to try and really get the excitement that develops when you have teams playing against each other.
Well, that's the whole point of it. 96 was like that too.
96 was okay. Yes, 96 too against the where they lost to the U.S. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 96, 87. Those were tournaments that people remember.
Absolutely.
Those are probably the two most, you know, 70, probably in terms of international tournaments, non-Olympic category. 72, obviously.
Number one.
87, and then 96. I mean, nobody remembers the 2004 World Cup of Hockey.
That's true.
I mean, that was the one right before the lockout that I think it ended the day before the lockout started, yes, or the night before. And
well, also, I think the problem has been that the World Cup hasn't been a regular occurrence.
Exactly.
So in 1996, the World Cup of Hockey replaces the Canada Cup, and then there isn't one in 2000, and you have one in 2004.
That's right.
And then
nothing for a decade.
We don't have one for 12 years. Yeah. So I think that the World Cup of Hockey, I know, you know, Richie, you know, was pretty vocal about, you know, the format of the World Cup. And I tend to agree. I mean, look at Drew, the World Cup of Hockey is going to have, you know, this team of players under 23. And then it's going to have the kind of all world team.
That team, sorry for interrupting, officially announced that Peter Chiarelli, Oilers general manager, will be the Young Stars GM, and Stan Bowman will be the assistant general manager of that team.
And I think we'd all agree that we would have preferred if it was five or six countries.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have to go with the format. I mean, there's no point in debating it at this point. This is the format. So whether you're going to watch it or not watch it, and I think if you're a hockey fan, it is still going to be exciting. And I've said this before, Richie, I just hope that this becomes a regular tournament and we don't have it kind of, you know, once every 8 years, once every 10 years. Because how can you get into something? I mean, the World Cup of Soccer is every 4 years. The Euro is every 4 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to know when it's going to happen. You can't just have it kind of sporadically. I think you're going to lose interest.
I mean, the World Cup of Money, it's going to be a heck of an event.
That's what it is.
It's going to be a crazy final when Canada and the U.S. play Canada. I mean, I could go on and on, but I just think this is poorly thought out. And I don't like the fact that it's where it's based.
All games, let me interrupt, all games.
That speaks to the money, Drew, again.
I agree with you. And as much as it speaks to the money, I mean, all games are going to be in Toronto.
It's like the World Juniors now. Like, you just monetize it to Toronto. Like, why is it there? Like,
sure. Well, it's there because...
Well, we know why. It's money. But, like...
You're right. It is a little disappointing that all games are going to be held in Toronto. I mean, you're going to be...
Why isn't there a game here?
Why isn't there a game here? Why isn't there a game in Montreal? I mean, the Team Canada is going to hold their training camp in Ottawa. Why isn't there a game across? Why don't the Americans play a game across the border in Buffalo?
100%.
Why aren't they playing a game in Philadelphia? Didn't they play in Philly in 96?
New York.
I mean, they played some games over in Europe, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
They did. The division was over in Europe, and they came over.
And, I mean, I understand that maybe you don't want to have it everywhere in the world at the same time, but just holding it in Toronto just seems like such a... They just went with the default boring answer of it all.
I just think that the whole tournament doesn't make any sense to me.
Sure.
Like, you guys know I love international competition. I am so into it. Mm-hmm. But you create these teams that have no ties to anybody, which is ridiculous.
That being, of course, the Team North America and then Team Rest of Europe.
There's no pride. There's nothing. There's no memories. Who cares who wins this tournament? I mean, this tournament is completely irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It's going to make a boatload of cash. That's it. It's going to make a boatload of cash for the NHL and the PA, so it's the one thing they can agree on.
Yeah.
So one thing you can get Donald Fair and Gary Bettman on the same stage.
I agree with you, Richie, in the sense that the Olympics are still going to be, and they haven't committed, by the way, to the 2018
That's
Olympics.
Right.
But I think we'd all agree that we would like to see the NHL participate. And, you know, it wasn't until really late in the game that they agreed to go to Sochi, if you remember, right? Because there were all those issues leading up to that year, right? But I think, to Richie's point, I mean, the Olympics are now the only true best of international tournament.
That's true.
We got to mention the World Hockey Championship, because the World Hockey Championship, even though, you know, it's maybe not as important as it is when compared to the Olympics, but it's still an important tournament.
That's
I think
fair.
It is.
Certainly got a lot of importance in Europe. I mean, we think underestimate how important that tournament is in Europe.
And they get the format right.
Right.
At least they get the format right.
Well, you mean there's no Team Rest of Europe in the World Hockey Championships? I mean, you're absolutely right. The Rest of Europe and the Team North America. Now, I mean, that's only supposed to be a one-off time that they're going to be that those teams are going to exist.
It makes no sense anyways.
Which just tells me they rushed into it just to get the paycheck without fully thinking it over.
Like, aren't the best rivalries guys like Crosby, Ovechkin, Canada, Russia, that kind of thing? Like, isn't a great rivalry McDavid, Eichel? Mm-hmm. Why are they playing on the same team?
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and Richie, I agree with you, and I've always agreed with you. And I've kind of just, I guess, accepted that this is the format. And hey, I got to tell you, leading up to the 2010 Olympics and the 2014 Olympics, my excitement level for this is not high. I'll admit. And I'm the biggest hockey fan. I watch junior hockey. I watch high school hockey. Mm-hmm. Rich and I go watch NCAA hockey in Grand Forks every year. I'm a huge hockey fan, and I think we'll get into this a little bit more leading up to next summer. But I'm. What are we playing for here? That's kind of the issue, right? Like, the Canada Cup, going back to, you know, just to go on a bit of a tangent here, 1972, we all know why that tournament was such a great tournament. It's because it was about more than just hockey.
That's right.
I mean, what was going on in the world, it was two countries, you know, that had different ideals and all that, but it was also kind of to the Russians showing Canada that, hey, we can play hockey with you, because up until that point, Canadians dominated the sport. I mean, and I'm not just talking about the Olympics, but I'm just talking about in general, the culture and everything. So it all started, really, that tournament, 1972, and then you mentioned, you know, 1976, 87, 91 Canada Cup and all that.
Well, there was an aura of mystery around the Russian players still then, because you didn't see them in the NHL.
But even in the past, like, 2014 semifinal Canada US 1-0 game, 2010 gold medal game, 2002 gold medal game. There is a huge rivalry here between the Canadians and Americans, and now you're basically throwing that, and that's the ideal final anyways, and you're throwing it to the side by throwing all their top-end young talent onto a different team and not taking part in that rivalry. That's foolish.
And truthfully, I mean, so
If Connor McDavid is one of the 20 best players in Canada and he's not on the team and they lose, why do I care if they lose? That's why I never put too much value on Canadians in the World Juniors. Because if their seven best players are in the National Hockey League that should be on the roster, why do I care if they lose? It's not a best on best.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know why the NHL and the NHLPA couldn't have just said, well, we have our six teams and we need two more. So Slovakia and, you know, I don't know, Slovenia, you guys are in.
I mean,
is anybody really going to, like, you know, is anybody going to stand up and scream? Or Slovakia and Switzerland?
I mean, Switzerland has done great in their development of the program.
Switzerland deserved a team as much as the Czech Republic deserved a team.
100%.
And the issue here is that in previous years and previous incarnations of this tournament, it was about the best nations competing for world hockey supremacy. And even though it doesn't mean as much as it is, did in 1972 in terms of, you know, Canada going up against the evil empire. This is still, you know, about you putting on your jersey and competing. And these guys putting on your country's jersey and competing. And I'm not to say that I don't think, you know, guys in the NHL are going to take pride in playing in the World Cup of Hockey. But I think, you know, they made it a little gimmicky here with these teams. And again, you know, there's probably people out there that are listening to us and saying you guys are ridiculous and they love this format and it's going to appeal to a younger demographic. But I think at the end of the day, most hockey fans, I think, would probably want a tournament that just featured countries and didn't have an all-star team or two all-star teams. To me, it's kind of like, you know, it's like the Joker in the deck. I don't really know, you know, what it's going to prove, because
like who's hoping for the youngsters?
Well, these teams aren't going to win, first of all. Yeah. I mean, the two teams, the two non-nation teams, have no chance of winning this tournament. So,
I mean, I don't know that they have no chance. I think they could pull off in a one game tournament, in a one game semifinal, they could upset somebody, certainly. It's just silly is what it is. It just doesn't make any logical sense or why they needed to go this route as opposed to just picking Slovakia and Switzerland and saying you're the last two teams.
They should have gone with five or six countries. I think
we're all
in agreement.
Do that.
But this
do a one pool round robin featuring six countries.
What's wrong with that?
What's happened, I would say, is that it's made it into a little bit more of a showcase as opposed to you know, a true tournament that's going to determine which country has the best hockey team. And, you know, 2004, Canada won the World Cup of Hockey, and obviously, you know, the last couple Olympics. But again, that's what's really going to matter as far as what people take seriously. This is for the NHL to grow the game, I would say, more so than anything.
A small market team, two unrestricted free agents, and an ownership dispute. We'll talk about it next after the commercial break here on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Eric Staal's camped out, and here he comes. Staal breaks it alone on Elliott, and scores! What a goal by the captain! Eric Staal makes it 3-1, Carolina.
Eric Staal, currently of the Carolina Hurricanes, scoring in that clip. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at Bernstein's Deli. .com. Thanks to everybody who came out and supported Bernstein's during Burger Week, which wrapped up earlier this week, and of course the Poutine Cup, which took place a couple days ago as well. Bernstein's Deli making a very fine showing in both of those events. And of course, I guess, you know, if you're still looking for maybe some high holiday food, if you're of the Jewish faith as we are, that's coming up. The new year starts tomorrow night, and then Yom Kippur after that, the Day of Atonement. Bernstein's Deli, your place to check out. I'll take this opportunity to wish you both a happy new year.
Absolutely. Happy New Year. You know, on the topic of the Poutine Cup,
yes.
Whoever wins the Poutine Cup, do they eat like poutine out of the cup?
No, actually, they eat French fries in the shape of Vladimir Putin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what okay. It's, you know, that's how that works.
That's good, Drew.
Thank
that's
you. You enjoyed that one, did you?
That's good.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
It's
I'm
topical.
Glad
we were talking about Russia last segment. You know,
it's all topical. Yeah. Exactly. Poutine Cup, it's all very similar. Carolina Hurricanes have a couple of decisions on their hands as they enter into the 2015-16 season. And it's interesting decisions similar to what the Winnipeg Jets have, similar to what the Tampa Bay Lightning have with Steven Stamkos, similar to what the Los Angeles Kings have with Anze Kopitar, in that the face of their franchise, really the two pillars of their franchise, in Eric Staal and in Cam Ward, are both unrestricted free agents at the end of the year. Eric Staal is coming off of a contract that has a salary cap hit of $8.25 million per season. He'll be 31 years old at the end of October 2015. Cam Ward, he's coming off a contract that pays him $6.3 million per season. An overpay, definitely, right now, given his play as of late and given the, you know, Carolina Hurricanes franchise in general. He'll be 32.
Try to pay somebody at least. So.
Yeah, he'll be 32 at the end of February. Stahl and Ward, and then factor overall another factor you got to play into effect here is that the team is supposedly for sale. Peter Karmanos, the longtime owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, apparently looking to sell the franchise.
What about expansion?
Well, yes. What about expansion? I mean, I actually think they're putting another team. They're going to put a team in South Carolina is what they're going to do. North Carolina, it's a natural rivalry. What could go wrong? You know, Greenville, Charleston, they're huge hockey markets.
Huge, huge.
Yeah. Long story. You know, how are the Carolina Hurricanes? Can they afford to lose, really, the two faces of their franchise, the two players that brought the Hurricanes to their greatest heights, taking them to the Stanley Cup Finals, taking them to the Stanley Cup?
9 years ago.
9 years ago, but those are the guys who did it.
Andrew Ladd was on that team.
Andrew Ladd was on that team. I mean, what do you think, how do you think this plays out over the course of the 2015-16 NHL season?
Okay, well, let's first look at Eric Stahl here. Because he's the big one out of the two. We know that the Carolina Hurricanes have tried to trade Cam Ward. You know, that's a fact that's been reported. His contract is large, and I'm a big Cam Ward fan as well, and he struggled. I mean, he isn't the same dominant goalie. I mean, you know, talking about Olympics and all that, I mean, you're talking about a guy who was always talked about one of Canada's top three goalies, but it's going to be interesting to see, Drew, what happens with Eric Stahl. And I think, you know, Eric Stahl and the Carolina Hurricanes as a whole have had some down years, and this year I would say that they don't have a very good chance at making the playoffs. I wouldn't say that they're a top team by any stretch of the imagination in the Eastern Conference, but when you look at the Carolina Hurricanes and even a guy like Jeff Skinner, he's a guy that they were possibly looking at trading. But with Eric Stahl, similar age to Andrew Ladd, I believe he's a year older than Andrew Ladd, is coming off a down year. And, you know, for a guy, as you mentioned, Drew, who's making $8 million, you know, you'd say that, okay, well, look at his numbers and you'd say, wow, he's up there with guys like Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry and you know, Zach Parise. And the question you have to ask is, Eric Stahl, is he the dominant center that he once was? And, you know, you go back to the, you know, we're talking, you know, 2004 through 2010, really. It's really just been the last 3 or 4 years, maybe, that Eric Stahl has tailed off a little bit. But then you got to ask yourself as well, well, the team around him has been so bad in Carolina. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jordan Stahl was brought over from Pittsburgh, you know, and it was going to be, you know, the way it was supposed to play out, Richie, was, you know, okay, you go up the middle, you got Eric Stahl and Jordan Stahl, 1-2 up the middle, and Jordan Stahl's had some, you know, struggles and injury problems and stuff like that. But the team, Carolina, has struggled not only to develop goaltending to replace Cam Ward, and that's why they brought in Eddie Lack from Vancouver, mm-hmm. who's going to most likely be their starter, or at the very least challenge Cam Ward to be the starter, but they've failed to draft particularly well.
Yeah,
and you look at kind of where they're going. Well, where are they going? What is Ron? You know, they acquired Chris Versteeg and Joachim Nordstrom for the Chicago Blackhawks, which was a salary dump for the Chicago Blackhawks, so they could sign Marcus Kruger, Richie.
Mm-hmm.
But where is this team going? Because, you know, they've made some good draft picks here.
You got Hayden Fleury and Noah Hanifin.
Noah Hanifin. They picked up fifth overall.
Yeah.
So, and Hayden Fleury, as you mentioned, Richie, was a 2014 draft pick. So, you know, they've stockpiled, you know, the cupboard for defensemen.
They needed to.
I mean, these guys are young. I mean, you can't expect these guys to do what Aaron Ekblad did last year. I mean, Aaron Ekblad is a special talent. Noah Hanifin's a good defenseman, but don't expect Noah Hanifin to do what Ekblad did last year and really, you know, steal the show there.
Sure.
And you got some talent there, but back to, you know, Eric Stahl, Drew, I mean, if you sign him, you're not going to sign him to a 1 or 2 year deal. He's going to want a longer term deal. And as far as his trade value, it's immense. If a team in either conference, you know, is looking to bolster their lineup, uh-huh. Eric Stahl is that player.
Well,
and you could argue that maybe at this point in his career, he's a second line center.
Well, does he play wing, though?
Or wing.
That's a question for me. Is he a winger or a center?
He's primarily been a center, but he has played wing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, part of that reason, Richie, why he stayed at center in Carolina is because they don't have many top-end options on the first line, right? After you get past Jeff Skinner and, you know, Alex Semin is gone, but Elias Lindholm has kind of picked up a little bit of that offense. But you got to ask yourself, you know, does he factor in to the future, right? And I would say that if this team is in a complete rebuild, you might as well trade Eric Staal and get a King's ransom and get some prospects and get some draft picks, because I think...
I agree. You need to trade him.
Yeah.
I agree. And Jordan Stahl's there. That's a play too, right? I mean, if the brother, what happens with him? Maybe they trade both brothers. To me, it makes a lot of sense in Montreal. Need big center there. He can play center and wing, and he can skate. He makes a lot of sense in Montreal. We can go through the league. He makes a lot of sense in a bunch of teams. But I do agree that you trade him. You're in a full rebuild here. You're not going to win in the next 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
You try and stockpile. You have Hayden Fleury now. You have Noah Hanifin. You like Lindholm. I like the contract they got Lindholm on. So that's your last few first-round draft picks. You trade him. You try to give anything you can for Cam Ward. Maybe you do trade Jordan, and you just do a full rebuild. And I think that's the best bet. Jeff Skinner's had concussion problems, but he's 23. So 3-4 years, you're good. He'll still be 27, 28.
It's amazing that Jeff Skinner's only 23.
I know, because he came in so early. But if you're Eric Staal and you sign, he's probably looking at a 4-year deal in his next contract. Will they even be good by the end of that contract?
So it might be starting to trend upwards
maybe,
at that point.
Maybe.
Or, you know, but at that point in time, you know, you have a 34, 35-year-old player and what you know who's going to be in UFA. I mean, he's not going to be. If Eric Staal, if the Carolina Hurricanes are trending upwards, at 4 years from now, Eric Staal is not going to be a driving force behind that team.
Right. And
that
Ron
point.
Francis has said, quote, "We're comfortable letting this thing go down the road a little bit." He's not too panicked,
sure,
because at the end of the day, he knows he can ship out Staal if he has to. Now, he has a no trade clause, but at the end of a contract, if he's not going to be signed.
And if you go to the place where you can play in some playoff games or...
Usually, yeah. And even if his brother is there, usually it's not as much of an issue.
Yeah. If it's clear that they're not going to re-sign
right.
him, what does he care if they trade him 3 months earlier and
right.
he gets to play in some playoff games?
Right.
When he hits free agency, assuming he does hit free agency...
You're looking at like a 4-year, probably $28 million deal, probably?
20, how much?
28, around 28, there,
so
probably.
About $7 million a year, you figure? A little bit of a...
Probably 6 to 7, I think. If you think his last year was a bit of an aberration last 2 years, but before that he was always a 70, he's getting older, but 70 to 75 point guy, right? I mean, pretty consistent if you look at his numbers.
As of 2 years ago, he was during the lockout shortened year, he was still over a point a game.
But before that he was 70, 76, 70, 75, 82, 70. I mean, that's pretty consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you're looking at 6 to 7 a year on a 4-year deal. I don't think you're looking at much more than a 4-year.
Well, then you're talking about a guy who's into his mid to late 30s.
Unless you're doing
a
Gabbert contract.
Sure. And then Cam Ward is, of course, what about Cam Ward? Is Cam Ward, are his sort of poor numbers a function of a downturn in his play, or is it a function of the team that he's been playing, that's been playing in front of him has been pretty terrible?
He's had bad teams, but, I've always been a big Cam Ward fan, he's regressed, and he's not the same goalie that he has been, and I know that he's tried... to change the style and correct some of the weaknesses in his game, but he's not that goaltender that he was before, and I think the salary unfortunately hurts him big
sure.
time, and I think that when you're talking about Eddie Lack, they go out and acquire Eddie Lack because Cam Ward can't play the same amount of games that he could in the past. Rich, he used to be able to play 60 games, and I think it's not to say that he isn't still an NHL goaltender. But I think you have to ask yourself, too, that if a team believed that he still had it, they probably would have even taken his salary.
Well, to me, he makes a ton of sense later in the year for St. Louis. That's right. I still like Cam Ward's game. He's had injury problems and groin issues, I think, has been the main one for him. But I think St. Louis makes a lot of sense for him later in the season. Some of his money's off the books.
It's interesting. Cam Ward, a guy that everybody thinks pretty highly of. Or at least used to.
Mm-hmm.
His career high in save percentage, .923.
Yeah, but he was consistently batting out .915s for a while there, Drew.
Yeah, he had three. He had a 4-year stretch from 2008-09 through 2011-12, where he was his low was .915 and his high was .923. So he's always in the sort of that juicy.
He's very
spot.
Consistent usually, and
yeah.
As you mentioned, he used to play quite a bit of games, right?
Yeah, he used to be one of those 70 game warhorse.
That's a lot of games.
Yeah.
So. And he's getting up those numbers. That's not a huge. There's no issue with that.
Another interesting team to watch as the season progresses. Let's head to break. When we come back, Daniel Briere is supposed to be calling in to join us. We'll talk about his tremendous NHL career. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.